Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
It is March 30th. It's been a couple of weeks, I think, since we last joined you, but we are back. James Charbonnier alongside Sportsnet Dossier's chief football writer, John Molinaro.
Hello.
For another busy show today.
Yeah.
We'll get to some Major League Soccer and the Vancouver Whitecaps later in today's show. We will definitely get to that Cristiano Ronaldo sculpture.
Oh, man.
You seen this thing?
Yeah.
Wow, it's amazing, actually.
It's like a caricature.
It is caricature.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I love it. We'll get to that. And also, the new format for qualifying for the World Cup, it's almost been announced. It needs approval. We now kind of know how many berths each confederation will get. So we can attack FIFA later in today's show as well a little bit, which is always fun.
Yeah, good stuff.
But we'll start with some Premier League chat for you. We're back from the international break, of course, early on Saturday to kick things off on Sportsnet World. You can catch the Merseyside derby, Liverpool against Everton. Now, the last time the Toffees won at Anfield was 1999, almost 18 years ago. It's amazing, Wow. Actually. It's been that long. Let's head to our man on the ground who will be at this game, Richard Buxton. Richard, welcome to the show. For Everton, it's been, let's face it, a dreadful couple of weeks. You know, it's been a really good season so far. I think Kuma's done a wonderful job with that team. Some young players being blooded. But the last couple of weeks, it started with Lukaku saying that, you know what, I don't think I'm going to sign that contract after all. And then last week, we saw the awful, awful leg breaker Seamus Coleman. James McCarthy did his hamstring in the warm-up to the Wales game for Ireland. Now Morey's out for the season as well. What is the mood in the blue half of Merseyside right now?
Well, I think it's always traditionally derbies when Everton ever always goes to Anfield. There's been this, like you say, they haven't won since 1999, and it does feel that no matter how high Everton are flying, they always come down with a bump at Anfield, no matter where they finish in the league. Sometimes they finish higher than Liverpool and they still get trounced at Anfield. And I think the injuries over the past few weeks haven't helped. They're probably the bigger one of the recent international ones was probably Seamus Coleman, as you say. It was a horrific injury. But also they've got question marks over Morgan Schneiderlin. He went off injured in the last game against Hull City, and there's question marks over whether he'll play, and he's been a big, big influence. So as you can imagine, the mood's a little bit cautious heading to Anfield this weekend.
And the Coleman leg break, I mean, it was horrific. Just interested to hear your take on that, and how has it sort of played out in locally in Liverpool? I'm guessing Everton fans are pretty upset about this.
Yeah, I think Everton's relationship with the Republic of Ireland was already a bit strained because of the James McCarthy incident, which has been playing out all season. He's obviously been picking up injuries, and then he's been called up to Ireland usually when he's not been fit, and as we saw last week, he's aggravated that injury. So there's kind of a lot of, I wouldn't say ill will, but there's probably not a lot of good feeling towards the Ireland camp at the moment. But I think for a tackle like the one Coleman suffered, I don't think anyone really could have envisaged that. It's not the sort of one that you can kind of guard against or that you expect to happen really on international duty. You don't really expect it to happen on club duty these days, even in a game as firm as a Merseyside derby, which kind of shows how the time has changed. But it's been a big shock, and he was a big player for Everton and a very influential figure in that defence.
It's a great point, because you look at this team so far this year, and obviously Lukaku's getting a lot of press for what he's done. The kids, getting exposure, Tom Davis, Mason Holgate, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, really good stories. But some of those veterans on that team, in particular Seamus Coleman, quietly has had just an outstanding season, and it's very, very important for a young team to have that leadership as well. So it's a big loss.
It's a massive loss. I think Coleman probably was a potential captain in waiting. I think everyone's accepted that Phil Jagielka isn't going to be the Everton captain beyond this summer. He may not even be an Everton player beyond this summer. His career has just fizzed out, and I think it was probably going to be Seamus Coleman as one of the early contenders for the Iron Man, because Leighton Baines is pushing 32, 33. So he wasn't going to be one who was appointed for longevity purposes. It would be a short-term fix, as it has been in Jagielka's absence, and even Ashley Williams to a lesser extent. So Coleman was a firm leader. And as you know, you don't need to have the armband to show leadership qualities. And I think Coleman was a classic example of that. He was a player who he likes getting forward, but he also is under no illusions of his prime duties, which are staying back, defending, and making sure Everton aren't exposed down the right-hand side, which he does remarkably well. And as you say, it's going to be a big loss. But you also mentioned the youngsters, and it's an opportunity for Mason Holgate to step up now.
Right. Just looking at the red side of the Merseyside derby, what have you made of Liverpool's sort of recent ascent? They've climbed up to fourth in the table. I think they're only 3 points off the pace of Tottenham for second place. What have you made of the way that they've been playing in recent weeks?
Well, I mean, from a Liverpool perspective, it's quite refreshing that they have stayed on course for a top four finish, and we've seen in recent years that as soon as the title bids falter, then Liverpool's season falls apart. And when the bar's been set a little bit lower and it's been a top four finish, it's been the primary aim, Liverpool have fallen out of the running. They've ended up in a Europa League place, or they've ended up in seventh. I mean, you even go back to Brendan Rodgers when they finished eighth, and that was kind of an indication of how far they'd shrunk. The frustrating part for Liverpool is that they were actually considered legitimate title challengers until the turn of the year, and you look at the way Chelsea have run away with it now, and that's coincided with Liverpool falling away, with Sadio Mane going to the African Cup of Nations. Obviously, other things have played a factor. They've had a lot of injuries, notably to Felipe Coutinho, to Joel Matip, Dejan Lovren, and now Adam Lallana. So there's been a lot of things that have unseated that rhythm, and it's quite telling about the impact of the injuries have had on Liverpool. But Jurgen Klopp's only played his strongest 11, or had his strongest 11 available, for one Premier League game this season, and that was probably the most emphatic performance against Watford, and that was the game when everyone thought this team was going to challenge for the title. They might not win it, but they will go close, and since the turn of the year, it's all fallen away. So in that respect, it's quite frustrating for Liverpool. But obviously, if they do get a top four finish, which has become the raison d'etre for a lot of Premier League clubs now, they aren't in the hunt for the title, they're always just on the periphery. I think they can constitute that as success, even though there is no silverware.
Yeah, obviously it's a work in progress there under Jurgen Klopp, but tell me about the fan base and their patience levels with the club right now. You're right, I mean, they're on the cusp of finishing in the top four. That's a good step in the right direction, but they're not spending much money. Haven't done really under Klopp thus far when you factor in the outs as well as who's come in. This summer coming up, assuming they qualify for the Champions League, which makes things easier, of course, to get new players, how important is it to spend some real money on some real players to appease this fan base?
I think probably not the case of spending the money. It's more a case of attracting the players. And you look at the last time Liverpool were in the Champions League was in 2014, and they just got agonisingly close to winning the title. They were a few points off Manchester City, who won it. And you thought that there may be some impetus with the club, and that they might be able to attract some stellar players. And the end product tends to be a lot of incoming from Southampton. If you remember, they brought in Lovren, Adam Lallana, Ricky Lambert for about close to $50 million for the three of them. And then when they were looking for a striker to replace Luis Suarez, the influence that Suarez had was absolutely unimaginable for most of us who'd watched him develop over the years. They had the option of bringing in Alexis Sanchez and ended up with Mario Balotelli. So it kind of shows that the recruitment side was a little bit off. They're in a stronger position now with probably a high calibre of manager than they had under Brendan Rodgers. Jurgen Klopp's name obviously travels quite well in world football. And the scouting system and the delegation for transfer and recruitment has changed a lot. It used to be an infamous committee. Now it's a bit more streamlined. It's two or three senior figures making the decisions, of which Klopp is one of them. And Klopp has his eye on a few players already. I think Julian Brandt from Leverkusen is one of the main ones, and he's going to be target number one. And I think if Liverpool can land him, that will be a big statement of intent, but there has to be more, and that's been the problem. There's always been one marquee signing, and if that doesn't work out, there's no fallback. So there has to be strength in numbers on that front.
Just circling back to Everton, Richard, what do you make of this whole Lukaku thing about, whether he's going to stay or not? And earlier this week, there were reports in the British press about a possible replacement being Kyle Larin, the Canadian forward who plays in MLS for Orlando City. Does that name register over in the UK? Or are people talking about Kyle Larin at all?
Probably not as much as he probably should be. Because, I mean, you look at the statistics for Kyle Larin, and they're quite prolific. He's obviously broken to double figures in the previous two seasons with Orlando City, and he scored 3-2 already, so he's obviously starting on a bit of a strong footing. And you think with the appetite for the MLS that's growing in the UK and growing across Europe, it's a surprise that he's gone under the radar. But that said, he is very much a player that I think Everton probably would look at. Maybe not as Lukaku's direct replacement, but as someone to come in and share the goals in the event that he leaves, or possibly even if he can stay. I mean, he's the link between the MLS and Everton is quite strong, even dating back 20-odd years. We won't obviously mention Preki as much around here as...
No, please don't.
..be mentioned over the... Yeah, but I think he's the sort of player that I think Steve Walter, the director of football, who was famously at Leicester City beforehand, has come into scout. You look at the players he's picked up on, people like Idrissa Garnaghy, players who have been under the radar but not completely off radar. He's one of those players who would fit that sort of billing. I don't know if it's dependent on Lukaku staying at Everton or not, or whether he does leave. I mean, there's been mention of Chelsea being in the frame in the past, and whether that comes to fruition, we won't know. But certainly Kyle Lowren does have the statistics that back up potentially coming in at Everton. He could be a diamond in the rough in the MLS, because there are obviously bigger name players. And it's telling that Kaká said he would he'd be an odds on to go to Europe, and maybe to an elite level at Europe. So there's probably not much greater praise than that.
Yeah, I think people forget that Landon Donovan had a little stint at Everton and did really well, and the fans, you know, liked him a lot. Let me ask you this, Richard. We're talking to Richard Buxton here on Merseyside. From an Everton fan standpoint, is there a bigger concern that they're going to lose Lukaku, or that Ronald Koeman might leave this summer? What's the biggest concern, the biggest worry?
I think the biggest concern is probably Lukaku. I mean, a lot of the talks with Koeman has been going to Barcelona, and you can sort of understand that, because obviously he's made cutting his teeth as a manager, and he's quite well thought of being part of the Barcelona class in 92. But the difficulty with that is that Barcelona are a club in need of change and need someone who can come in and drive them on. I mean, Koeman maybe in 5 years' time might be the perfect fit for them. At the moment, he's still finding his feet. He's obviously had some bruising experiences, particularly in Spain with Valencia a few years ago, about a decade ago. So his stock isn't that high as a manager. As a player, the fans adore him over there. But I think Lukaku is probably the bigger concern, because irrespective of what happens at Barcelona, irrespective of what happens at Arsenal or wherever else that Koeman has been touted for the hot seat, he does seem to be quite intent on seeing out the 3 years. And obviously we know he's reneged on deals before. We know what happened with Southampton to come to Everton. But I think the threat of losing Lukaku is more immediate. It's more damaging. The manager can do plenty, but he can't magic up 20-plus goals, which Everton have been crying out for the best part of 30 years, since Gary Lineker, actually, coincidentally, UEFA Barcelona, was playing for them. So Lukaku is always going to be the bigger threat in the immediate term. Long term, whether the club pushes on, they have a lot of bold ambitions. They have plans to build an iconic Wolfsburg stadium, and Koeman is central to that. He's been tipped by the owner, Farhad Moshiri, as being the perfect man to lead what he calls the Northwest, the Hollywood of football in the Northwest of England. So keeping Koeman up is imperative, but in terms of replacing the shortfall that Lukaku's departure will invariably bring with that 20-plus goals, as I say, it's going to be very difficult to make up.
Richard, a great insight. Thank you so much. Enjoy the match tomorrow, and we look forward to reading about it on sportsnet.ca.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
That is Richard Buxton. Yes, it's an interesting one, this, and a couple of academy notes I mentioned. The kids coming through Everton right now, really exciting. Tom Davies, by the way, is just,
yeah,
you watch this kid, he's a throwback to the 80s, you know. He's got the black boots, the socks down by his ankles.
I love
he's got
that
the flowing, oh absolutely, it's incredible. But Peter Vint, who was the academy director of Everton, stepped down a couple of days ago from his position. Now apparently, I don't know the full details, but his son had trialled with Everton, was involved in the academy, has just announced he's off to Manchester United. And then days later, Vint, his dad, resigns. They're saying there's no connection there, but you wonder, that must be pretty awkward around the academy.
Yeah.
Because, sure, he's getting advice from his dad.
Right.
Right? But they're saying it's not connected. Also, breaking right now, just coming down, basic information is that Liverpool could be facing an academy transfer ban. Apparently, they tapped up some kid from Stoke. Well, that's the allegations. And they could face a ban as far as transferring academy players. So,
right. Interesting. I mean,
there haven't been many academy graduates at Liverpool in recent years.
It's been a while.
Really. I mean, let's face it, Gerrard's the last one of note.
Right.
I thought John Flanagan might be that guy for a bit.
Yeah, he should,
but
promise.
But he obviously been loaned out, and injuries. Martin Kelly as well.
Right.
But he moved, so not too many. But it should be a fun one on Saturday morning on Sportsnet World always is the derby.
Yeah, it seems like that's, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because you know it better than I do, but it seems like there's, I mean, all rivalries in England, you know, there's that stick, but this one seems to be kind of more friendly banter, and I don't think there's as much visceral hatred.
It changed, I think. I mean, it's called the friendly derby, people call it right now. There's still a lot of tension, right?
Sure.
And on the field, it can be a war zone.
No, I get it.
But it really changed in the late 80s after Hillsborough.
Oh, Hillsborough.
And, yeah, and that tragedy really brought the city together, and they were playing in the FA Cup final that year.
Right.
And it was, you know, in previous years, at that time, the two teams were very, very good teams,
yeah,
competing for championships. And, you know, prior to that, there'd been a lot of nastiness in that derby off the field. And that really kind of united this city. That being said, there's been moments in recent years when that edge has come back a little bit,
right,
people are saying. You know, it's not quite as friendly as perhaps it once was, especially with Liverpool, you know, kind of breaking away from Everton in the table over the last couple of decades anyway. So,
right.
But it was a good one. 7 a.m. Eastern.
It's an early one.
I'll be up for it.
I will too.
Actually, a good weekend of games, actually, on Sportsnet. On Sunday, we got Man City against Arsenal.
Yeah.
The late one.
I wonder how we got the two marquee games this week. That was an odd one.
Seriously, we'll take it, though.
Yeah, absolutely, sure.
Arsenal, by the way, I want to ask you this before we get to our Whitecaps talk.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger, speaking to the media today, says, I still know what I'm going to do, what my future will hold, and you will know at some point when you're ready, but not now. He said 2 weeks ago, you'll know soon. It's like this big tease. It's driving me crazy. Just clarify the situation.
Yeah.
Doesn't it make you wonder that perhaps people are saying he's going to re-sign a 2-year deal, right?
Right.
But if it was that simple, wouldn't it be announced by now? I smell a rat, J-Mo.
Possibly. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, we're not in the room, so we don't know what's kind of going behind the scenes. But I suspect he's going to stay on in some sort of short-term deal. And, you know, it'll probably be, yeah, I'm going to do 2 more years and then I'm going to retire, or then I'm going to sort of walk away. Mm-hmm. That's just my
gut. It just seems right now it's a distraction. So the last thing this team needs right now is this distraction.
But do you think if he comes out and he says, I'm definitely gone or I'm going to stay on for 2 years, I don't necessarily think that it's going to be any less of a distraction, right? Because if he stays on, then there's going to be a holy hell to pay, because people are going to be irate about, oh, I can't believe this is going on.
Sure, but if he's committing for 2 more years, he's confident and can deal with that. The club can deal with it, surely, if he understands that the fan base may not be happy, but I'm doing it anyway. This ambiguity right now is just, I think, driving the fan base crazy. Just let us know, and then we can make plans.
I think it's a no-win situation. I think it's one of those things where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, depending on what you do. So I'm not sure that you really, you know, the blowback would be any less.
Well, it's not working right now. Whatever's happening, it's not working.
Well,
they've lost 4 of 6.
Right.
So, hey, issues.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears now and head to Major League Soccer. For the Canadian teams, action resumes this weekend. Vancouver, desperate. And they are desperate for a win at this point, taking on LA.
Tough one.
Winless so far this season. Just the point for Carl Robinson's team. Let's head now to BC. Tyler Green joins us, host of the Soccer Talk Van podcast. All you need to know for all things Whitecaps, so you can follow that at Soccer Talk Van. Tyler, welcome back to the show. Where do we start with Vancouver right now? I mentioned just one point thus far. Let's start with discipline, shall we? Out of all the issues for this team at the moment, is discipline perhaps the most easily resolved and maybe the most important?
You would think that it would be the most easily resolved, but it's a problem that they had all of the 2016 season, and obviously they get the Kendall Waston sort of carryover from last year, and then it's this year that they've had a couple problems here and there, and so, you know, in your mind, you would think, hey, this is the easiest thing to accomplish, but the Whitecaps haven't figured it out all of 2016, and so far they haven't really figured it out in 2017. So I don't know if it's that easy for the Whitecaps to figure out, and I don't know what Carl Robinson has to do or say to the players. You know, maybe it has to come from the players themselves, but something is amiss there, and they haven't been able to figure out and how to correct it yet.
What's been, and if there's been any sort of fallout over the Breck Shea thing, I mean, to me, that was a pretty bonehead thing that he did, you know, swearing at the ref and then confirming to the ref when the ref asked him if he actually did swear at him. What's been, I don't know, what's come out of all of that?
You know, there hasn't really been too much. You know, it's funny, Vancouver is, with the way that they had the season last year in Vancouver, a lot of people haven't necessarily been talking about them this year. as you guys probably know, there's been various cuts to media here in Vancouver, so there's just not a lot of people covering this team, so there isn't a lot of people talking about it right now. I guess the good thing is that people aren't talking about it. I guess the bad thing is that people aren't questioning that boneheaded move and what the Whitecaps are going to be doing about it and how to, you know, alleviate these type of things that the Whitecaps, like I said, have had so many problems with it dating back to 2016.
Let me ask you about Robbo here. I got to know him quite well when he was here in Toronto. He's so softly spoken. He's very, very calm, but that fire burns deep inside. We know that. From what you've seen of him as a football coach, what is he like, you know, in that room, perhaps, or, you know, within that team?
Yeah, within the team, you know, like you said, he's very soft-spoken, but he's very thoughtful with his answers, with the way that he treats the players. You know, he has a lot of respect for them, treats them very well. And I think that a lot of people are, a lot of fans, I think a lot of media members, just a lot of people around town are kind of just wishing that you would see something a little more from Carl Robinson. You would grab a player, you know, by the scruff of the neck sort of thing and really get, you know, really get into somebody's face and tell them they have to be better. Now, it has happened, we know, behind closed doors on occasion, but, you know, sometimes you'd kind of like to see a little bit of that fire, you know, elsewhere. A lot of the media conferences, it's, you know, yeah, we didn't play well enough. He just doesn't sound like he's that, I guess, pissed off, for the lack of a better term, about the way this team performed. He just seems very calm and level-headed about it, and I think people would like to see a little bit of that emotion from him, but I think it works sometimes with the players, and sometimes, obviously, players need to have a kick in the butt, and that's kind of what I think the Whitecaps need right now, is Carl Robinson to have show a little bit more fire out there.
Now, he signed a new deal, of course, in the offseason, but given what happened last year and what's happened so far this season, we know this game can be very fickle. What kind of leash does he have with ownership, do you think?
I think they like him a lot, so I think there is that leash. You know, up until summertime, he's pretty safe. I think once summertime rolls around, if they aren't liking what is happening, then you will see changes. If the Whitecaps start this season, you know, March obviously almost over now. If you go through April without a lot of points, a lot of wins, and you're kind of dead in the water, that's going to change things, obviously, very quickly. You know, not a lot of hope, I think, that they're going to be able to advance in the Champions League. So right now, I think Carl Robinson really has to focus on this Major League Soccer team and Major League Soccer play and get them back on track and make sure that they can start getting the points, because that's really what's going to keep him his job. And so that's, you know, as much as he's got a leash, I think, until summer, if things don't change and they don't start picking up 3 points and wins, that leash is going to get tight real quick. And then I think they may have a change of heart and thinking they might need to change it. But I guess the biggest problem for the Whitecaps is then, who do you go and get? You know, are there the coaches out there that can make the team? Do you put somebody in an interim role? So that's sort of the other question that you have to think of. What do you do if he is ultimately fired?
The lack of discipline aside, Tyler, when you look at the first three games that the Whitecaps have played in MLS, what have you made of their overall sort of form? What's been, as I said, aside from the discipline, what's been the issues, do you think?
Yeah, well, the biggest issue, again, for the Vancouver Whitecaps, you know, they've had games where they've been very good defensively. They've obviously had games when they haven't been great defensively. But the biggest problem, yet again, for the Vancouver Whitecaps is they don't really have that goal-scoring threat. And as much as they've got guys like Freddie Montero and a Breck Shea that, you know, and a Kakuta Mane that can score goals and create things, they don't have that one guy yet, that number 10 that's going to kind of link everything together. You know, they've as much as Pedro Morales wasn't working, they never replaced him with somebody that is going to do that exact same thing. Granted, they did have some injury concerns, and maybe that's going to change with a Bolaños back, or you know, maybe Mosquito can find his rhythm and get in that role. But they just haven't been able to really be a dangerous team going forward, and that's, I think, been the biggest problem for the Whitecaps, because right now it's a lot of, well, give Kakuta the ball and see if he can run past everybody, give Eric Hurtado the ball, see if he can run past everybody, and the Whitecaps have become a little one-dimensional in that aspect. So I think that's their biggest problem. If they can create and start controlling play a little bit more in the midfield, that's going to make everything else better within the team.
This has been a really depressing interview so far. sorry, Whitecaps fans. So let me change gears here a little bit and look at some hope and some brightness in the future. Alfonso Davis, the kid, he's 16 years of age. He's seen some game time this year. He looks to be the real deal. He's in the Canadian national program. Born in Liberia, though, but let's hope he would eventually side and get capped by new coach of Canada's national team, Zambrano. From what you've seen so far in practice, in games, is this kid the real deal, or is it a little bit early to judge him?
Well, you know, it's always early, I think, to judge when a kid's 16, but he's, you know, he's going up against MLS players and he's doing well. You know, there's been scouts in town watching him play from Manchester United, from Liverpool, from Chelsea. So some of the bigger teams are coming in to check him out over in the UK. He, you know, just talking to various reporters that have seen games, you know, from overseas, from in North America, they love what they see from him. So he's got all the skills, he's got all the attributes physically. But the biggest thing that I've heard from players and people that know the game are all talking about the fact that he's got the mind as well. He's got the brains to play the game. You know, he just doesn't put his head down. And that's sort of, a lot of people now are comparing him and Kakuta Mane. And with Kakuta, he puts his head down. He starts going at guys, and that's all he does. He's always going to shoot the ball. Whereas in Alfonso Davies, it's, okay, I'm going to put my head down. Okay, I'm going to stop it. I'm going to look up. I'm going to see what else is out there. So he's got the brain. He knows that he can't just beat guys with, you know, pure speed and stuff like that. So I think there is that hope that he is the next big thing, and he is probably not going to be a Whitecap for long as we get depressed again. he's really good. He's the real deal. Earlier this week, he mentioned that he wanted to play for Canada, and that's his choice to play for Canada. Now he's got to work on getting that residency sorted before he can definitely do that. But I think we're going to see some big things from him. How great is he going to be? He's probably going to be a great player in Major League Soccer. Is he going to be a great player, you know, in the world, in Europe, in European leagues? Time will tell on that.
You know, another bright spot was the play of Spencer Ritchie against Toronto. David Ousted suspended. You know, he looked, I thought, pretty solid in his goalkeeping debut in MLS. Obviously, David is firmly the club's number one. But just wonder what you think about Ritchie's performance, and has he moved up the pecking order above Pablo Tornaghi?
Yeah, obviously, like you said, David's the number one guy here for probably the next few years here. But I think they like Ritchie. They like what they have in him. I think they obviously wanted to sign Tornaghi and make sure that they had a backup that had some experience, you know, was a good age to kind of be that backup player, but then give Ritchie some opportunity. And yeah, I think he performed well enough in that game. Obviously not necessarily the best group in front of him either, but you know, here's a guy that is just a young guy playing a lot last year in with the WFC2 team. So got a lot of experience there. They obviously got rid of Marco Carducci because they liked Ritchie so much. And so he's moving up that order. And I think right now you're looking at like that 2A, 2B type of thing with Tornaghi. And
right. And
really it's going to be, I think, who trains better during the week that is going to get more of those opportunities. I think Ritchie's still going to go and play in those WFC2 games as well occasionally, just to give him some more experience and some game time action. But definitely I think whoever is the better of the two in the week between Tornaghi and Ritchie is going to get that backup role on any given weekend.
Tyler, as someone who's watched a team struggle for wins for many, 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 many years in MLS, stay strong, my friend. The wins will come.
It gets better, pal. It gets better.
It might take 10 years, but it does get better.
You can't complain. We've got beautiful sunny skies in Vancouver, so hey, things could be worse.
Exactly. They could be far worse. Tyler, thank you so much. Great job, and we'll chat to you real soon.
No problem. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
That is Tyler Green. Please follow Tyler on Twitter at TylerGreenFC. And as mentioned, at Soccer Talk Van is a great podcast for all your Whitecaps news and opinion. Tyler and our friend of the show, Simon Fudge, involved in that show.
Yeah.
Did you by chance see the arrival of and the unveiling of Bastian Schweinsteiger in Chicago?
I heard about it, but I didn't actually see it.
So apparently I saw it. One of the members of the American media piped up in this unveiling and said, with Bastian's arrival at Chicago, could they maybe go on now and win the World Cup? He then rephrased it because there's obviously dead air and
right.
said the same thing again and had to be educated by the panel.
So saying, he asked Sebastian that?
Yeah, and he had to be educated saying, actually, we don't compete for the World Cup. The guy had no clue about football, wow. soccer.
Who was it? Do we know? Or?
I don't know.
Is he even a sports writer?
No, I guess not. I guess not.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, it's all very well. It's all very well, you know, sending people. If I go to a press conference for an event that I'm not, you know, aware of or educated in, fine. But don't ask questions. Let the people that know the sport ask the questions, write your story.
Or study up.
Study up at least. For God's sakes.
And, maybe he meant the FIFA Club World Cup.
That, you know, apparently that's, I read somewhere they were trying to angle it towards that, but it wasn't that.
No, come
it
on.
It was not that.
Right.
My God.
So he asked, oh my God.
Yeah. And poor Schweinsteiger was like, just like,
yeah, what would
is this being lost in translation here?
Right.
So yeah, check it out. It's on Twitter. It's everywhere on Twitter. So it's pretty amusing.
He had two goes at the question. So yeah. He asked it the first time. And then
Bastian like stared like blankly like, and he goes, let me rephrase the question and said it again.
Wow.
Yeah. There are people out there that think that clubs play in the World Cup, I guess. You know, not everyone watches the World Cup or MLS, believe it or not.
I don't know. That's still pretty bad, James.
It's pretty bad. It really is. Not as bad as that Cristiano Ronaldo sculpture, though.
Oh, my God.
Again, we mentioned it earlier, but you have to check it out. It's just hilarious. I'm pretty sure if you gave me a pile of clay, I could do a better
job. You could
do
a better job?
Yeah. Pretty confident.
What kills me is that he had his photo taken beside it. So I would have thought like his handlers or whoever, his people would have like saw it and just kind of said, yeah, you know what? This probably isn't the best move that you sort of be seen next to this thing.
Well, but they signed off on it before he even arrived, right?
Well,
apparently, from what I'm reading from the interview with the sculptor, like he just got some pictures from the internet and based his sculpture around that.
It looks like a cartoon.
It does. It's like Ronaldo's melting.
Yeah. It'd be like, wasn't he on The Simpsons that one time?
Yeah, he was.
It'd be like if he...
That was more realistic, though.
That's right. The Simpsons was more realistic.
Yellow Ronnie looked more like Ronnie than this sculpture did.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's hilarious. Also hilarious are these berths for the World Cup in 2026. Not approved yet by FIFA, but essentially, as we know, they want to expand to 48 teams.
Right.
So under this current application, UEFA would see their berths increased by 3 teams to 16, which is what they wanted.
Wow.
Okay, fair enough. Africa, 4 more teams to 9. There's just not enough good teams in Africa. Sorry, there isn't.
Right.
What about Asia? Football. Asia, 3.5 more berths.
That's crazy.
Way too many.
Sorry.
South America, 1.5. I mean, give them 3.5 more berths.
Yeah. But then it's like the entire continent. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. CONCACAF, 2.5 more berths. Good for Canada.
To be expected.
No more hex. No more hex under this current.
What would they do?
Well, one with Oceania, by the way, is going to a full berth, not just half a berth.
Okay. So does Australia now move back to
Oceania? Maybe. There'll be a 6-team playoff for 2 berths.
In CONCACAF?
No, overall. There'll be a little tournament which might take over from the Confederations
Cup. Oh, so
now,
for all the half spots.
In the host
spots.
Nation, yeah.
I gotcha.
So a tournament.
Round robin or?
Don't know any more than that, J-Mo. Haven't read the full story.
So 6 teams?
Saw it before I came up today.
So 6. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So basically, as we expected, qualifying will mean less and less and less and less and less.
Right.
As this Frankenstein's monster decides to destroy all that is good about the World Cup.
Right.
That's my personal opinion, though.
Yeah, we saw this coming, right? So, I mean,
can't wait to read more comments from those hipsters out there who'll just take the other side and say, no, it's great. It's going to be wonderful. It's good for the World Cup.
I mean,
contrarians.
Right.
Hell.
If Canada can't qualify now, then
it'll be really embarrassing if Canada ends up co-hosting the World Cup in 2026 and still can't qualify.
Yeah. That would be
pretty bad.
Like,
because I mean, the reports are that it might well be a joint bid, but the US will have the majority of games and the big games.
Right.
So does that mean Canada gets a berth or not? Don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot of speculation that it wouldn't necessarily mean an automatic berth for Canada. So it would be, yeah.
Well, the sad part is that it wouldn't affect attendances one bit.
No, you're probably right.
Right.
But I think in terms of the imprint that the tournament would make in this country,
it would be massive. Embarrassing to host games and not be in it.
Right. Whereas if Canada was in it, I think that would just be massive for the game in the country. So, I mean, it would be, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Sure.
Whatever it is, 20 years, no, 10 years out.
Thankfully, we have a guy very near the top of FIFA.
Yeah.
Who might have a soft spot for Canada.
Yeah. Victor Montagliani.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We're out of time. Coming up this weekend, as mentioned, we have the Merseyside Derby, 7 a.m. Eastern on Sportsnet World. That's followed on Sportsnet Nationals, Burnley against Spurs. Spurs are must-watch TV this season. On Sportsnet 1, we have Leicester, the champs, looking really good, won 3 straight games in the league against Stoke. And we're back on Sunday as well. We got some big games for you. Swansea-Middlesbrough, not the biggest game, but you know what? The way the relegation pitch is looking right now, it's a 6-pointer. And then at 10:30 Eastern on Sportsnet, Arsenal against Manchester City.
Be a good one.
Bit of pressure on Arsenal on that one.
Just a tad.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Our thanks to Richard Buxton and Tyler Green. J-Mo, as always, thank you very much. Eric Prime behind the glass, thank you very much. Cheers for listening.